Hi there, it's Ben from World Have Your Say. This is a download from the BBC. If you want to read our terms of use, go to bbcworldservice.com/podcasts. Here's today's programme.
Hello, welcome to World Have Your Say. I'm Rabia Limbada and this is the Global Conversation on the BBC.
I could have been a good mother to them. You know, I've been a good mother to the two children I raised. I could have been a good mother to the two that I lost.
For three decades, from the 1950s, an estimated 150,000 unmarried Australian mothers were forced to put their children up for adoption. The practice was sanctioned by governments, churches, hospitals and charities. Today, the Australian Prime Minister made a long-awaited apology on behalf of the nation. On the programme today, we'll hear from a mother arrested in her home and forced to give up her son for adoption. You can join the conversation online, facebook.com/worldhaveyoursay.
We've heard the news from the BBC. Now it's your turn.
You can post on facebook.com/worldhaveyoursay or get in touch via Twitter at @BBC_WHYS.
Welcome to World Have Your Say.
Hello, I'm Rabia Limbada. Welcome to the programme. UB minus, that was what was stamped on birth certificates of hundreds of thousands of babies born between 1950 and 1970 in Australia. The letter stood for unmarried, baby for adoption. For three decades, 150,000 unmarried mothers were pressured, deceived and threatened into giving their babies up for adoption. The children were given to married couples. It was believed at the time that this would be in the child's best interest. Earlier today, the Australian Prime Minister, Julia Gillard, apologised on behalf of the nation to those affected by the practice. She said mothers had been betrayed by a system that gave them no choice. We'll spend the show talking to mothers who had their children forcibly taken away from them, as well as the children who grew up not knowing how they'd been adopted. You can join the conversation via Facebook, facebook.com/worldhaveyoursay, or you can email us, worldhaveyoursay@bbc.com.
I'm Ayuna Wan from South Sudan, and this is BBC World Have Your Say. To take part in this live debate, call country code 44203162 4242.
There are a number of guests that want to take part in World Have Your Say today, and each with a very personal story to tell. So I'm going to step aside and let each of you introduce yourselves.
My name is Tricia Seymour, and I gave birth in 1970.
My name is Annie Papalardo. I'm from Brisbane, Australia, and I was an adoptee. I was born in 1963.
My name's Phil Frampton. I live in Manchester. I was born in 1953 in St Agnes, Cornwall, in an unmarried mother's home where my mother suffered.
Tricia, Annie and Phil, thank you all for joining us on World Have Your Say today. Really appreciate you taking the time to talk to us. Tricia, why don't you start by telling us what happened to you, and then maybe each of you could pick up after that.
Sure. I was in what I considered a steady relationship in 1969. I found out that I was pregnant, and we decided that we would escape and get away from my parents, as we realised that they weren't going to be very amicable with the situation that I'd found myself in. Eventually that didn't happen. I was returned to my parents, and they put me into a home called St Anthony's Home for Children in Croydon in Sydney in Australia, which was run by some Anglican nuns, and that's where I worked until I unfortunately had a fall down a flight of stairs and was then sent to Crown Street Women's Hospital, which was then known as St Margaret's Hospital in Sydney. And waited for 6 weeks working in the basement until I gave birth to my son. Giving birth to him, I was injected with sodium pentosol. A pillow was placed in front of my face so that I would not know any or have any memory of the birth, which I didn't. I consider myself fortunate, because 3 days later that I can remember, I was laying in my hospital bed, and a candy striper, who was a nurse's assistant, I guess you would call her, was filling my water jug, and she leaned over and she said to me, "You have a little boy and he has blonde hair." That was the only information I had for 36 years.
Horrible.
Until
horrible.
I found my son.
Mm. That's so sad.
Horrible. Absolutely so sad. Horrible.
And why don't you tell us your story?
Okay, well, mine, whilst I'm the adoptee, my story, I guess, is quite similar to that of Trisha's. My mum was in a steady relationship. She was 20, and when she found out that she was pregnant, her boyfriend at the time basically disappeared, left Sydney. She managed to hide the pregnancy until she was about 7 months, and then she had to tell her parents. And being sort of from, I think, the good Catholic home, they took her to the unmarried mother's home in the Paddington Women's Hospital in Sydney, and they too had a sort of basement area where the unmarried mothers went. And
same hospital. It has various names.
Yeah, oh, okay. So she spent her 2 months there doing laundry and chores and things that the hospital wanted. The thing that I found quite scary was quite a few of the women that were in there at the time were a result of rapes and incest-type relationships, which really sort of bothered me. I didn't think that that would have been the case, and I'm kind of glad that I didn't know that before I started looking for my mother.
You're correct.
Yeah, I might
That's
not
exactly
want to have known. Yeah. So, and that was really quite shocking to me. When she had the baby, I don't know exactly what happened in the birth. I don't think they put a pillow over her face or anything like that. But what happened during the birth was, in the middle of her giving birth, the nursing shift changed, and the new nurses that came on weren't aware that I was a baby to be given up for adoption. And when I was born, they handed me to her. So she got to hold me, and then when they realised their mistake, they snatched me out of her arms and whisked me away. And a hospital orderly, like a cleaner or a wards person, watched this happen and went back to my mother later and told her how I was. And over the couple of days that she was in hospital, this orderly went and stole the photo of me that they had. They had photos taken of all the babies at their cribs. She actually took my photo and gave it to my mother, and my mother then carried that photo around with her in her wallet until she met me, and then she gave the photo to me. And I was named on my original birth certificate after this lady who was updating my birth mother on my progress.
Yeah, it's a pretty horrible story. Our research in Britain indicates that similar processes took place, Annie, as what your mother and what Trisha suffered. I was talking to a woman the other day, and she was saying how, as late as the 1960s, the late 1960s, she was denied any gas and air. She was cut open, had 16 stitches, no anaesthetic, nothing, and told that was her punishment. This was a hospital, a punishment for being an unmarried mother. And
that's terrible.
It was barbarism. And
absolutely. Every day we had to go to church every morning to renounce our sins, of the sins that we were holding with inside us. Yeah. And there was a 14-year-old girl that sat in the pew beside me every day who had been raped, and she was being told by these nuns that she had to renounce the sins that were inside her. There was many sins that were happening for this 14-year-old girl. None of them were inside her. They were beyond her control. It had already happened to her.
Yeah. But I mean,
it was just barbaric, absolutely. And, I mean, I had an accident while I was at St. Anthony's cleaning the stairs. I fell down the stairs. 6 weeks before I was due to give birth, I hemorrhaged quite badly. And during the night, the bed linen in the dormitory that I was assigned to, where I was sleeping, naturally the sheets became soiled. And the next morning when we had to go for our health check at 7:30, I said that I wasn't feeling very well and that I had bled during the night. Before they called an ambulance for me, they insisted that I got these bed sheets and I washed them until they were clean before they would take me to a hospital.
Gee, you don't see, as an adoptee, I have never really given too much thought to what my mother might have gone through, and it's not until all these stories have started coming out and to the whole lead up to the apology that I really understand just how awful it was for the mothers. As an adoptee, there's always that sort of hole that needs to be filled, and you know, it's a different thing. But you know, I didn't go through any trauma at that stage. I may not have been cuddled and nursed and made that connection like a newborn does with its mother, but I don't have memories like the mothers do, and it's just so tragic. It's horrible.
Tricia and Annie, and also Phil, I'm loath to interrupt you because it's absolutely fascinating listening to your conversation, but I want to introduce Lily Arthur, who's a mother whose child was also taken. And Tricia, I gather from your reaction there, you're familiar with Lily. Lily, why don't you tell us...
Very familiar.
Good.
Yes.
Well, Lily, why don't you introduce yourself and tell us what happened to you?
Hello. My name's Lily Arthur. I'm the coordinator of Origins. I was actually born in England and came out to Australia as a 9-year-old migrant. So I had a similar story of when I was living with my son's father at the age of nearly 17, a month off 17. I was arrested in the middle of the night when they found out I was pregnant. We just had police come into our home. I was taken away, locked up for nearly 10 months. During that time, it was actually a Magdalen laundry. Forced to work when I went into a hospital to give birth to my son. I was tied down to the bed, my face pushed into the mattress, and I had my child delivered and whisked away. I was drugged for 8 days, where they came and extracted my consent to legalise the crimes that were committed against me. So basically, I was locked up again, folding pillowcases. The very afternoon that they got my consent, still under the influence of the drugs that they'd been giving me in hospital. So I was forced back to work the very same day that I lost my child. I think the whole experience has been a nightmare that I've been caught up in for many years, nearly five decades. And it's something that I don't think any person humanly possible can recover from.
Yeah, a lot of people say, oh, this is 50 years ago or 40 years ago, but they don't, you know, realise that people are still living with all this pain. The unmarried mothers, the birth mothers and the adoptees still carrying so much pain. That's why the apology is so important, I think.
Well, I don't think anything is going to resolve what's happened to me. Yeah. My son is still stolen. Nobody's given him back to me yet. I'm constantly reminded of that when I write his name. You know, every birthday card, Christmas card is a constant reminder that my stolen child has been attached to a stranger's family tree. That is going to be the timeline for any future generations of my family, is to be tacked on the end of somebody else's lineage. I find that highly offensive. And, yeah, you know, and I'm being quite honest here when I say I don't think an apology can fix that for me.
I don't think it can. It won't fix everything. But I think at least a lot of women I know live with a sense of guilt about these issues, like it was somehow their fault, and they were told it was their fault, that they were made, they didn't realise that they weren't given informed consent when they were forced to sign their babies away. And for them to know that society accepts that they were not the criminals in this case, they were not to blame, but it was the religious institutions, the government and so forth who really carried the blame for these crimes, that I think a lot of people have told me is what they want.
I think it's Phil, good.
I think
that,
you're
you know,
correct, and Lily, I think you're correct as well. But I think that the apology, what the apology brought to me today, was not so much an apology for me personally, what I went through, because nothing anyone can ever say until the day I'm cremated will ever solve what I went through.
No.
But what it, hopefully it will do, well, it may stop something like this happening
yeah.
in any country in the world ever again, and it may also help my siblings and other people understand
yeah.
what we went through. They
yes.
will that just to give them an inkling of what was actually happening, because there's so many people out there that are absolutely totally naive that this ever happened.
Yeah.
I think
ever.
That's just
I think
that
that's Australia.
Excuse Sorry. Me, can I just say that I went out to a club 2 weeks ago to be confronted by a baby that was in foster care, and I asked the foster carer, you know, how long, I didn't know the child was in foster child, how long have you had the baby? I've had the baby since day one. The child was only a couple of weeks old, and it instantly traumatised me that knowing full well the newborn that the foster mother was carrying is slated for adoption somewhere along the line. You know, like, that re-traumatised me, and it was physical proof that, you know, babies are still taken, and I, you know, like, from their mothers at birth and whisked away. I can only imagine, you know, what problems the mother's got, but they're going to be compounded by the fact that the child that she gave birth to is in the arms of a stranger. Now,
yeah.
and... I may be a little bit cynical about, you know, a lot of things, but I still believe that they still are going to continue this sort of practice.
Yeah, well, as an adoption
market,
we need to be vigilant. You can only, while there's money involved.
30 years down the track. Mm. These are the people that I deal with every day.
I think it's, I think babies are still taken and put up for adoption. I hope that they're not taken in the same barbaric way. But I think for the apology today and being an adoptee, it's a different feeling for me. But this whole process has raised my awareness to what the mothers went through. I've been adopted. I'm almost 50. And I didn't really understand what the mothers went through until probably this last 12 months. And I think that the apology has, I guess, awoken our nation to the fact that this went on. And a lot of people who may say to you, well, look, it was such a long time ago, maybe they've got a bit more of an inkling of how you feel and that you can never mend that. The apology will never mend it. Nothing will ever, ever mend it, and you will live with it forever. But other people might have a better understanding.
You're listening to World Have Your Say. You're hearing from Lily, Annie, Trisha and Phil. Thank you all. Do stay with us because I want to hear from Mary and from Teresa. Teresa lives in Dublin and Mary is in Nova Scotia. Hi, Teresa.
Hi.
Hello. You've been listening to the conversation between our guests. Why don't you tell us your story?
I was actually born and raised in Dublin, and at the age of 48, which was almost 11 years ago, I discovered that I wasn't who I thought I was. So in effect, I was illegally adopted. And by illegally adopted, I mean I was handed over to my adoptive parents at 2 days old, and then I was registered as their own child. So to all intents and purposes, I was their child. And I never knew anything about this until 11 years ago. And I actually thought I was the only person. And then I discovered there's actually thousands of us. Now, this practice went on in the 50s, and I believe right up into the 80s. It was a known practice. It wasn't done for love. It was done for money. It was a money-making practice. Now, I've been trying to campaign for years now to gain access to files from the Irish government. Now, you may say, well, there's no files if you're illegally adopted, but there are some files. For instance, I've got the names of a doctor, I've got the names of a social worker, I've got the names of a nurse, and funny enough, her files actually turned up 2 years ago. So there are files there. However, the Irish government will not help us to gain access to any of these in order to give us an identity. We're not alone in that. There's actually thousands of legally adopted people in Ireland who cannot gain access to files. We're 27 years behind England and the rest of Europe. And really, where is this secrecy? We're labelled. Us illegal adoptees, we're actually in the minority. However, we do have a lot of support. But we're actually labelled as de facto. And that, to me, signifies you need to go away. There's nothing we can do. We haven't had any recognition at all.
Teresa,
I've had no recognition from Minister Fitzgerald. I handed her in a petition last year and I got no recognition for that.
Teresa, I'm going to just stop you there because we are running out of time and I'm desperate to hear from Mary as well, who's okay. In Nova Scotia. Thank you very much, though, for telling us your story. Just bear with us just a moment. Mary, why don't you tell us your story?
Well, I was taken from my mother at birth. My mother was a single woman, 21 years old. I was taken from her at birth and placed in foster care. At the age of 14 months, I was adopted by my adoptive parents, who are now deceased. My adoptive father was a chronic alcoholic, and his wife was 51 years old. She was mentally unstable. She had been in a coma previously for 6 weeks with meningitis, and it had caused brain damage. I was adopted by this very abusive and dysfunctional couple in the small Canadian province of Prince Edward Island. My childhood was one of unimaginable distress and abuse. My adoptive father was intoxicated on a daily basis, and my adoptive parents were constantly fighting in the home. I was raised as an only child in this toxic atmosphere. Being told by my adoptive mother that the only reason she adopted me was to see if having a baby in the home would stop her husband drinking. I experienced prolonged, systematic, mental, physical, and psychological abuse through my entire childhood. I learned later, after I had a child of my own, I started investigating my adoption, and through some very diligent research and my tenacity in gaining access to the court records of my adoption, I learned that the documents that were prepared to the judge for my adoption were perjured. They contained untruthful information. There was no background checks of any kind that were done on my parents. My adoptive mother had four adult children from her previous marriage. They were not mentioned in the adoption papers. They had not been contacted to be interviewed about her suitability infant.
Mary, I'm going to have to stop you there because we have about 20 seconds left of the programme. But thank you so much for telling us your story. Also, thank you to Tricia, Teresa, Lily, Annie and Phil. It's clearly a very emotive subject, but thank you all very much for being so open and honest with us here on World Have Your Say. You can continue talking about this and giving us your reaction to what you've been listening to on our Facebook page, facebook.com/World Have Your Say. Thank you very much for joining us.